Celtic Stuff Live, the only toll-free call-in webcast produced specifically for Celtics fans. With your hosts, Jughead, JB, and the Duke. Celtic Stuff Live. And now, Jughead, JB, and the Duke.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another show, Celtic Stuff Live. I'm Jughead, a.k.a. Justin Poulin. Welcome to the show. We're going to actually introduce ourselves from now on at the beginning of the show. JB, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm good. I'm mellow. Just got back from 3 days in Canada in a meditation session up in the mountains. It's very pretty up there, a little chilly, but nice. I guess tonight is going to be partly devoted to the so-called bottom feeders. We're going to have some bloggers on from some of the other teams with the worst records in the league. And then I guess earlier than that, we're going to get a report on Yi. And the worst thing we've heard about Yi to date, I guess, is that he's like Rafe LaFrance. And I thought I would remind folks that Rafe was a first-team All-American coming out of college before he hurt his knees. He was playing, averaging for Denver 30 points a game and rebounding at a clip of about 8 with 10, 12, 14, 15 points a game right out of college. 1.4 blocks, 2.2, 2.6, 3 blocks in his first 4 seasons.
All right, JB, before you give Yee's life story, I just want to introduce the other co-host on the show, the Duke. That's John Duke. How are you tonight?
I'm great. I thought I was going to get introduced before Yi and Rafe LaFrance and all the members of the Yi Shinlin family.
No, that's my. I guess I thought know. You were going to introduce us, and as you did, instead of saying, "Oh, hi, JB, hi, John," we were going to give something with the introduction. That was
something.
What I thought.
I think
he
was thinking the abridged. Somewhere this side of the abridged world.
I didn't get that memo. I'm sorry, guys.
No, that's all right.
I'm pretty hard to abridge anyway, you know.
There's a lot to talk about here. So it's certainly, and the Yi talk is burning up the wires here. And certainly, I think I can't blame you at all for wanting to get right into it, JB, because there's a lot to talk about there. And we're going to get into that. Email we received and what was posted on Celtics blog here in the last couple of days, and I don't know if it's necessarily earth-shattering, but it's certainly notable. And
well, Chris Wallace expounded on Yi on Celtics.com, and you know, when he's interviewed Peter Stringer, so I'm not entirely surprised by the news, but just a little bit of confirmation, John, has got to have people wondering.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is obviously. There's been a lot of talk in the last 3 weeks that I think started with Danny Ainge trying to say, hey, there's more guys out there than Odin and Durant. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is some sort of organized effort by the team to make people realize, you know, set expectations low and you know, well, if you don't get the second pick, that all help is lost. But let's be honest here. No matter what anyone says, and unless it's
including
the second
Bill
coming,
Simmons, because right. You lie somewhere in between the Celtics and Bill Simmons' opinion, I'm quite sure.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Keep it in your memory banks, guys, is that Danny loves a smokescreen.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm thinking this guy's Robert Swift. That's what I'm thinking. And not that Yi is going to become Robert Swift when he gets into the league. I'm just hoping that Yi is a similar smokescreen as Robert Swift was, you know, in 2004 when that allowed Al Jefferson to drop down to us at pick number 14.
The only thing is it's an awful lot of plane fare to pick a smokescreen. They didn't have to fly twice.
Well, you know, they didn't know it was a smokescreen if it is until after they scouted him. You can't.
Twice?
Yeah. Well, look, if the guy's going to be a possible top five pick, I sure hope that Danny scouted him at least twice. Let me just say that. Because, I mean, you know, we've seen the YouTube clips. I'm not saying he doesn't have talent. I'm worried about his ability to play inside and get, you know, banged out of the box in the league. Now, you know, we'll get to that a little bit because we do have the email. It kind of talks about that a little bit. But because we are going to be going to, you know, to commercial break a little early, we're going to bring Eric Weiss on to talk about Yi. He's only got about 10 minutes. He's going to come on and join us before he boards a plane. So just, you know, to remind everybody, tonight is bottom feeders night. We're going to have, I mean, you know, when you're a bottom feeding team, not a lot of people are writing about you. So lining up guests for tonight was a lot more difficult than you'd expect. But we are going to have, I guess, three, possibly four of the six teams that we were looking for. Leading off tonight will be Thomas McKee from Beale Street Beat. Then we're going to have Davey Miller from 1420 AM The Breeze. We're still hoping to hear back from Chase Kutch from Impending Firestorm. And then we'll get Casey Holdall from Oregon Live. He covers the Blazers there. So, you know, it'll be an interesting night. We'll see what they think about Yee, you know, and if they've heard any anything as far as what their teams are thinking about, if you know, depending on if they don't get a top two pick.
Well, you're talking about... Oh, go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, part of the reason we wanted to do this is, you know, we wanted to have a little bit of a dialogue. We're the, I think, as being among the teams that no one's talking about, and for good reason, they were all bad teams. But everyone's got a different take on this situation, I'm sure. And if for no other reason, it'd be nice to hear, you know, if for some for trade possibilities or, you know, see what direction they're going in as a team. And a lot of these teams have a lot of uncertainty, even more than the Celtics do. And, you know, the thought is that let's bring everyone into the fold and see what they think. And, you know, you may end up with, I know the guys, just from reading some Bucks boards, you know, they're very high on Kevin Durant. And, you know, as a Celtics fan, you may want to walk into Tuesday night saying, well, if you don't get the number one pick, you know, we wouldn't mind if the Bucks got it, because then obviously if we got the number two, you'd have a chance to get Oden. And I think it, those types of things that play out in our head, that's what I'm interested to walk out of tonight with.
Well, I just was going to add with ye that NBADraft.net has pushed him up to number five. Draft Express still has him at number nine. So whether we will see that moving him up the draft board or not remains to be seen.
Yeah, and that was after an initial fall, was it not?
I thought I always saw him 9, 10, 11. But as I say, NBA DraftNet has pushed him up to 5.
I wonder what's happening with these Florida guys. I mean, I'm still, like I said on our site in our draft section, I'm big on Al Horford, but I've also been hearing some really good talk about Noah, who is a guy I was, even before March Madness, I was sold on him being a bust. He's got that ugly shooting form, but we're going to go to break. When we come back, Eric Weiss.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see, and digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
About 1 million and a half. 1-1. 1-1. Go ahead. Thank you. 1-1 now. 50 last call. Sold 1,000,001. Thank you. Bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company. Specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
This is for the guys in the pit. Last week, they were begging me to play. Some Neil. So there it is. There it is. That's for you guys. Thanks for sending me the clip. So let's bring on our guest, who is graciously giving us about 10 minutes before he hops on a plane. Good friend of the show, been on many times, you know him, Eric Weiss from Draft Express. Eric, thanks for coming on yet again.
Thanks for having me yet again.
Well, I know you're getting kind of burnt out because you're flying all over the place and you're looking at all these prospects and you're trying to assimilate incredible amounts of data in a very short period of time. And, you know, we heard a lot about Yee, and supposedly there's a rumor that if the Celtics don't get a top two pick on Tuesday night, that they are going to take this Yee Yin Lin. And so wanted to see, have you had a chance to see him?
Yeah, we have about 10 games of his on DVD that we processed through Synergy. So yeah, we have as much footage as anybody else. Certainly more than Chad Ford.
And I noticed that on your site it's updated that he's 23 years old. Is that pretty much confirmed at this point?
Yeah, I don't want to. We debated back and forth about how to present that, so we just decided to subtly change his age. You can pretty much lock that one in, though. He's an 84 all the way. 1984 for his birthday.
Well, I think we're gonna read this. We got an email, and I want to read you the email. It'll kind of steer the conversation here. It's from E, and he says that I think he found this from the Celtics blog thread, actually, some of it. But he says, I'm a former player of a coach that is a friend, great friend of Chris Wallace, Celtic GM. Wallace has made clear in recent discussions that Ainge is enamored with Yee. Chris states that the Celtics will not trade the 1 or 2 pick and select Oden and Durant respectively if that happens. However, if they fall to 3, 4, or 5, that Ainge will select Yee. Chris said that Ainge flew to China twice to personally scout him and has had foreign Celtic leadership follow him closely. You know, and then there's a recent Boston Herald quote on Ainge saying there are players more ready to contribute than them, Oden and Durant. Reed Yee, who has played professionally for years. Now, we're going to get to the second part of that, his email, later in the show, because he has some opinions that he'll throw in with that. But, you know, just taking a look at that, you know, is there any chance that this is like a Robert Swift-like smokescreen that they're putting out there?
I mean, anything's possible, but, I mean, I was talking to a number of the Celtics players, you know, and as well as just the fact that they've been out there between Chris and Danny have been out to China 6 times in the last half a year of this past CBA season. I mean, that seems like a hell of a smokescreen if you think about how long that flight is. And so I got to believe there's genuine interest, and I can understand that. I mean, 7'1", he measures about 7'1" guy that every single prospect we've talked to has said looks like a, you know, like a shooting guard, small forward in terms of athleticism. That, you know, shoots the hell out of the ball from, you know, 3-point range and pull-ups and turnarounds in terms of, you know, nobody, not going against competition, obviously, but just in the gym by himself, you know. It's impressive to see a guy like that, and it does make one reminisce about, you know, about Dirk Nowitzki when he's coming out. So I guess that's the lure. I don't think it's a smokescreen.
Eric, I want to know, The 23-year-old thing, the 1984 birth year, how big of an impediment is that? I mean, obviously, you don't see 23-year-olds coming out of the NBA draft anymore, but it's pretty routine. You see that in the NFL and other leagues where players are much more ready to step in and play. It seems like, if anything, that in the current situation of the Celtics, it's more important to have a guy that's ready to play. Once you get outside those top two, then it would be to necessarily get a young guy who, you know, shows a great deal of promise.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I don't necessarily know how ready Yee is to play. And I think that's where the age thing comes into play. Because he did put up very nice numbers, but the problem that he's had consistently is when he's gone up against players that are, you know, long and physical, he has not had good games. He tends to, you know, stay, you know, outside and be tentative. He lacks aggression at times when there's somebody of comparable size and strength going up against him. That was evident in the World Championship games. I'm sure a lot of people have seen. It might be their only exposure to him. And that's really the big question, because he's not like Darko Milicic or Nikolaj Skidasvili, who really had never played professionally ever, and they're basically drafted just off their workouts. I mean, he has put up numbers. He did average 24 points, 11 rebounds. He's had big-time games, but he has had trouble asserting himself. And that's one thing when you're 19, but when you're 23 and you've played for a while, you're wondering, well, is this a guy that can make that transition? Is, you know, is it a lack of familiarity with that level of competition that he can adapt to, or is it something that's always going to be an impediment? And that's, I think, the big question, because his skill set is, you know, unquestionable at this point, I'd say.
Well, Danny Ainge talked a lot about that professional competition. And, you know, I don't really have a handle. I guess it's, you know, players that didn't make the NBA, obviously, maybe some old college players. I mean, can you describe the height, the size, and the, you know, maybe give us an idea of the kinds of players that he's been playing against in that league? Has he been up against any other seven-footers? You know, just, you know, any key matchups that you may be aware of, stuff like that?
Yeah, well, there's definitely some seven-footers. In the Chinese Basketball Association, it's just it's not so much the height, although there are a lot of undersized guys he's played against, but it's the physicality and the skill level of the competition, which is everything. When he's gone up against guys that are, you know, like the European guys or the NBA kind of caliber athletes, that's when he's had his most trouble, because it's easy for him to dominate, you know, vastly inferior athletes. He's had trouble when he's gone up against people that can play toe to toe with him in terms of skill and athleticism. That's really what the issue's been. But I mean, he's played guys here and there. But in the finals, in the CBA finals, that was a big deal. They all went out to that game. It left a lot of scouts with a mixed bag, because Wang Zhuzhu, who was a guy that came over here a few years ago, I mean, he absolutely destroyed him. And people get maybe somewhat of the wrong idea off of that, because Wang had a lot of mitigating circumstances when he came over to the U.S. that didn't help him, you know, succeed probably as well as he could have. But at the same time, you know, he wasn't going to be a world beater no matter what. And this guy absolutely, you know, chops him up. Now, this is not the difference between a 27-year-old and a 19-year-old. This is a 23-year-old you're talking about. And then you're starting to say, okay, well, he's more mature in terms of age. Now, what needs to happen? I think that is the big question, is can he over the next, I think it will take 2 to 3 years, but can he over the next 2 or 3 years get used to playing against a higher level of competition and then start to find his spots against that competition? Because he hasn't played a high level competition. CBA basketball is not a high level. It's not anywhere close to international, you know, European basketball, and certainly nowhere near the NBA.
Yeah, is it my turn here, Jug?
Yeah, hop right in there. We've got about, you know, 2 minutes left before we have to go get our next guest.
My concern with Yi, and I've loved what I've seen, and I've read some things, and I guess he played pretty well against Pau Gasol at the World Championships last summer. But on defense, I hate to see Jefferson pushed into the center, and I'm not thrilled with them there on offense either. I think it puts him at a disadvantage, and it's easier for him to have to pick up a couple of fouls or leave the center lane unguarded. What do you think of Yi ever being a center and ever being able to defend at that center position?
He's not extremely heavy. He only weighs like 245 or so, and I mean, they're not going to build him up to 260, but I think when you're looking at a player like that, what you're really, your real argument is kind of similar to Durant, as you say, the skill level overall by putting those two guys on the court, an inside-outside combo, basically kind of wins the matchup, even if there's some defensive deficiencies. I think that's the philosophy, that at the end of the day, in theory, you're saying, well, this front court is far superior, you know, if you add up the offense and defensive sides together, and they'll just end up out-producing their counterparts. But you can put either guy in either spot. I think it's kind of like what you do with Detroit. Instead of demanding having a traditional center, you just put the two best skilled players you can as a combo. And most teams don't have two high-caliber players in their front court. And that's I guess, kind of the theory behind that.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Oh. Well, and we always have Perkins to come in and guard somebody if like Ilgauskas, one of the other big men, is starting to dominate.
Yeah. Well, Ilgauskas would get absolutely eaten alive by Jin Lin. I mean, Ilgauskas is so slow, and he's not really much bigger than you. He's a big guy. I mean, I just saw him like 3 days ago standing on the court. I mean, he's a big kid. He's just like Yao. He's got the big lower body. It's much more developed than his upper body, but his upper body is further along than Yao's upper body was when Yao came in to the league, which makes sense because he's substantially older than Yao was when he came into the league. But, you know, he's got a good body, and he's got good length, and he's got great athleticism. Doesn't have the best instincts defensively of all times, but once again, you're saying, you know, that assimilation process. Will he get up to speed over the next 2 or 3 years and be able to take his game to a level that it was at in the CBA competition?
All right,
well,
Eric.
We thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
Good luck on your trip, and we hope to speak to you maybe draft night. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great. By the way, FYI, kid was really impressed with out here that we had a maybe not so good of impression on when we came out because of certain things we heard, but really just kind of wowed us with his demeanor and his approach and everything is Marcus Williams from Arizona. He's got some stuff to work on in terms of his shooting mechanics and some other stuff. I mean, he's not a lotto guy or anything, but he's a solid little player and a great kid, so just thought I'd throw that one out there.
All right, Eric. Well, thank you so much. I know we kind of crammed you here right in the front, the beginning of the show to get you on before you keep on rolling. I know you're working your tail off, and you guys are doing a great job at Draft Express getting the information. I appreciate the tip on Marcus Williams. He's a guy flying under the radar probably because of all the bigs in this draft, but that's good information.
You're welcome, guys. Have a great show. I wish I could listen. I'll be surely listening tomorrow. So take care. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. Have a safe flight.
Bye. Thank you.
We are going to get our draft night going here, draft night. Wow, if we could only be there now. But our bottom feeders night going. I'm going to step out. I'm going to bring back Thomas McKee from Beale Street Barbecue. In the meantime, Beale Street Barbecue, nice. That's a nice – if you ever go to Portland, Maine, Beale Street Barbecue is a great place to eat. But one of my favorites, actually. But anyway, Thomas McKee from Beale Street Beat. I'm going to leave you in the trusty hands of the Duke and JB. You guys, you know, be nice to one another, and I'll be right back.
Lord help us. You know, the biggest thing I want to know, JB, is if any of these guys, if they have those knots in their stomach. I mean, I woke up twice last night thinking about lottery balls and ping pong balls and the like. You know, are these guys, do they feel as star-crossed as I am? You know, that's what I want to know. How about you?
Well, Tommy Heinsohn had some words today. He said he's never been very lucky, but he thought that Mike Gorman was the luckiest guy he knew when he was trying to get them to send Mike. Because he says, you know, look, if I get the number one, I can come home a hero. But if I don't, he says, I may not be able to come back to Boston for 3 years.
Sadly, I think Tommy's always got a place in Boston. I don't think you can undo all those championships he's brought to town. But I think that it, you know, certainly there's so much that's on the line, you know, Tuesday night. And I thought that Shira's article today really kind of played that out, is how much, you know, that image of everyone sitting there and knowing that of those, you know, now 14 guys sitting on that stage, one of those general managers or whomever, their career will be made, and probably there'll be 13 others who will lose their job. It really is a feast or famine type of thing with the draft lottery, and there's so much at stake for so many of these teams, and, you know, and even in Boston, where, you know, probably the Ainge is as safe as anybody outside of maybe San Antonio or Phoenix, there's a lot of trepidation. So,
well, I don't know about that, John. I thought that the re-upping of Doc was kind of a sign to Danny that they were going to tie the two together. And, you know, if Doc doesn't start well and they do decide to replace him, Danny may go with him.
Well, guys, I'm going to cut in here because I'm back, and with me is Thomas McKee from Beale Street Beat. He covers the Grizzlies. Thomas, thanks for coming on.
Hey, no problem, man.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we've been talking a lot about Yi Jin Lin, and you know, kind of wondering what your take is from the land of the Grizzlies, in terms of if you don't get the, you know, one of the top two picks, who do you like in this draft? And, you know, do you think Yi Jin Lin is worthy of the number three pick?
Well, I think he definitely is from from my perspective. You know, as far as looking down past, you know, Oden and Durant, you know, Brendan Wright doesn't impress me too much, especially on the Grizzlies. I don't think he would fit what we're trying to do. And then there's no question the Grizzlies need a big guy. I mean, obviously they'll take Durant at number two, but after him, they're looking for a big guy. And while Jin Lin isn't exactly your prototypical big man, I just think you take a gamble on him rather than going for a Roy Hibbert or, you know, Joakim Noah or something like that.
Now, your Jerry West has just resigned. Who is going to be handling your draft board?
Well, actually, Jerry West, which I don't really agree with this, but the owner, Michael Heisley, is allowing Jerry West to stay in through the draft. He's staying till June 30th, I believe. So Jerry West will, in fact, be handling all the drafting responsibilities and everything.
Well, that's probably better for the team. I can understand the continuity factor. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, let me read an email. We have somebody who contributes to the show pretty much every week, Lance G, and he did email some questions in for some of the bloggers. And since JB just kind of talked about that a little bit, you know, he writes in, new coach Billy Donovan becomes the Memphis coach, GM, president, and the Grizzlies win the lottery. Unfortunately, Donovan has no faith in Oden because he beat him so easily in the tournament. In fact, he has no faith in Durant and subsequently trades down to somehow get Noah, Horford, and Brewer. Paul Gasol now can't... I know, this is great. Paul Gasol now can't wait to get out of Gator Grizzly Town and demands a trade. Donovan is called by Danny Ainge and offers him the last piece to the puzzle, a quick defensive-minded point guard named Rondo and a broken-up Ratliff for Gasol. Does Donovan pull the trigger?
Well, you got. I don't know much about your boy, but he sounds like he's pretty thinking pretty big. But, you know, Donovan, from what I hear, definitely is not going to come to the Grizzlies. You know, as far as the coaching vacancy goes, right now, the Phoenix assistant, Mike, I believe it's Ivoroni, he is the lead candidate right now. Apparently he had dinner actually last night with the owner, Michael Heisley, and reports were that he's really impressed with what he hears. It was pretty informal, but right now he's the head guy. You know, if it was me picking, I would definitely – go with Rick Adelman, but it sounds like the Rockets are about to snag him up. So, you know, I would like to have a coach in place before the draft. Now, you know, these guys may be waiting to see if the Grizzlies get the one or two pick, and, you know, if they do, then they'll hop on. If not, they might look elsewhere, unfortunately. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
The one piece of logic in that email is that the Grizzlies do seem to be a little thin at point guard. Has there been any talk about trying to fill that hole?
Well, actually, you know, who knows what he's thinking now, but a while back when the Pistons were playing in Memphis, there was an article the next day in the paper, in the commercial appeal of the paper here about Chauncey Billups. He'll be an unrestricted free agent, and he said that he would be interested in coming to the Grizzlies, which, you know, would be pretty awesome. Who knows if his thoughts have changed now, but the Grizzlies do have quite a bit of cap room available this summer. That'd definitely be something Chauncey Billups would, you know, obviously we would do that if he's willing to come here, because Chucky Adkins sounds like he's not coming back for sure. He's a free agent. He'll be gone. And then Damon Stoudemire is just still, you know, never recovered from that injury, and there's a lot of talk about him possibly being shipped out of town before next season as well.
Well, given all the upheaval, and I think the biggest way, or the way most of Celtics fans have gotten, you know, familiar with the personnel going on in Memphis is due to a lot of the Pau Gasol trade talk that came up in the first half of this year, when the Celtics still had a heart beating in this season. That must have been really early on. You know, first of all, Thomas, what do you think his prospects are staying long-term with the Grizzlies? And two, you know, if he does still want to have a trade, because I believe a lot of this is because he asked to be to get out of Memphis, what sort of, you know, what are you guys looking for? Have you personally looked at maybe how good of a fit Austin would be to in terms of matching up with players coming back?
Well, to answer your first question, the thing that surprised me is there has not been one peep out of Gasol since the season ended about trading and stuff like that. I kind of feel like he's kind of waiting and seeing what happens in the draft. If we get a Odin or Durant, he'll probably keep his mouth shut, stay around, because things are going to be looking up for sure in Memphis. But then if things don't go the Grizzlies' way in the lottery, I think it's definitely a possibility we can start hearing those talks of I want out of Memphis from Gasol again. And, as far as trades go, Gasol, you love him and you hate him. Sometimes, I would have loved for him to be traded away, but then a lot of other times, you just think about what this guy can do, and he's still getting better and better every year. Unless he says he definitely wants out, I think you hang on to him. But going to a team like Boston, I'm not really sure if Boston, other than Pierce, has that much to offer for Gasol. I think maybe if you make some kind of a package with, Al Jefferson and Rondo and something else, that's a possibility, as you're talking about point guard slot being an issue for the Grizzlies. Other than that, I don't really see much else happening, but, hopefully we get one or two in the lottery and the Gasol trade talks are over, so.
Well,
that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you want Gasol to be happy and to stick around, and it would be a dream to move him over to the four and have Odin at the five. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about all the trade rumors before the season and leading right up to the trading deadline with Chicago. Just to follow up on this, do you think Memphis held out for too much if Gasol does end up being traded, take Deng out of that deal, I think, is what Chicago wanted. If you did that, I mean, do you think your team held out for too much, or do you think that was a reasonable asking price?
I think that was the right move in holding out. I mean, there's a few trade scenarios. Are you talking about just the Ben Gordon, Deng, and Nocioni, or which one are you specifically talking about?
I think it was Deng, Gordon, and they even wanted the number one pick at one point, and Chicago wanted to drop Deng out of that and replace it with Nocioni, and I think Memphis balked at that. So, did you need a player like Deng is really, I guess, the essence of that question to make that deal worthwhile?
Well, I think Deng was the main player that Jerry West actually wanted. You'd love to have a guy like Ben Gordon, but as everyone saw in the first, especially the first round of the playoffs, Deng's probably one of the most underrated players in the NBA, and he's only going to get better. And so, yeah, I think it was a good move to hold out. I think actually the team that made the mistake was the Bulls in holding out. I think they could have. The Bulls could have tried to change it from their end. Instead of taking out Deng, maybe possibly taking out Gordon and replacing him with somebody, and I think the Grizzlies might have bit at that.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely could have used an inside presence against the Pistons this past series, but it would have definitely made a difference for them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think if they lose both of those players, and Deng and Gordon, I don't believe, that they're in the playoffs. Or if they're in the playoffs, they're not making any noise at all.
Now, Thomas, going back to the draft, obviously you guys are, like everyone, hoping for the number one pick, and I think it seems like a no-brainer that you guys are going for Odin number one if you're in that that opportunity. I mean, Rudy Gay looks like he's, I don't want to say he's a poor man's Kevin Durant, but he has a lot of the same body type and skills that Durant brings to the floor. I'm just curious, though, does it really make a difference to you whether or not it's three or four? Having the opportunity to get somebody like a Yee or a Horford or your guy doesn't come off the board at number three. A lot of teams, for the Celtics, probably it matters unless they fall in love with Yee, and I'm not sure that they have that much over anyone else out there. For us, I think it matters very little if it's 3 or 4 or 5, because I think it will all matter on which team is picking ahead of them, what they want to do. Are you hard and fast on any of these guys?
You know, to preface your question, anything besides the 1 or 2 pick is going to be a huge disappointment in Memphis. You know, I don't even want to think about it at this point, but it's going to be a big disappointment. So, back to the other part of the question, you know, does it matter 3 or 4? You know, I really don't think it does. Like you said, it just depends on who's picking ahead of us, because it seems like Yee's a big question mark with a lot of teams. You know, Horford, he's a big body, but, you know, he's definitely undersized, and I think he might be, you know, kind of like a poor man's Carlos Boozer, but, you know, not even close to the caliber of Boozer, which, of course, no one thought would be as good in the NBA as he is right now. So you never know with a guy like Horford, but, you know, then looking down the list, you got, like, guys like Hibbert, who's, you know, obviously very raw, and Noah, he really, I hate to be a downer, he just does not impress me at all. And then Jeff Green, who I really don't know too much about, honestly. You know, like you said, I kind of agree with you guys and the Celtics fans that it really does not matter too much.
All right.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. It does matter, I think. I would think the Celtics would be looking at Yee and Hibbert. I think Hibbert at 7'2", and he's a couple of years older than some of the other players. He's been compared to Zydrunas Ilgauskas. Wouldn't be too bad to have a center like that in the middle, I think, for either of our two teams. But I think after 4, and I think Hibbert will go 4 or 3, after that, I agree with you, it starts to thin out dramatically with the big men.
Yeah, luckily for the Grizzlies, the lowest they can get is 4 in the lottery. So, you know, looking at that, I don't think, if we drop to 3 or 4, I think Brandon Wright, who a lot of people have right now as a number 3 or 4 guy, I think he's out of the picture for the Grizzlies because, you know, as you said, we already have Rudy Gay, who's, you know, pretty similar to Brandon Wright in some ways. Brandon Wright's a little more of an inside guy, but I think he'd stay away from him. And so I'd say 3 or 4, probably the Grizzlies are looking at Yee, Horford, or Hibbert, you know, similar to you guys.
Excellent. Well, Thomas, we've, boy, that 15 minutes flew by really fast, and we've got a bunch of other guys that we're going to be going to get to and to bring on the show, but I wanted to thank you very much, and, you know, for the people that are listening from your blog, I'm sure they know they're familiar with your work and your insights, but for the people in Celtics Nation, you know, if you want to get some more information on what the Grizzlies are looking at leading up to the draft, especially after Tuesday night, it might affect, you know, what happens with the Celtics. Check out the Beale Street Beat, and it's Thomas McKee. Thanks, Tom.
All right, no problem, guys. Good luck in the lottery. Not too much, though.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Good luck to you, too, outside of number 1 pick.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you guys later.
Yep. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work, Thomas. Thank
you. All right, appreciate it, guys.
And that was Thomas McKee from the Beale Street Beat. Big thanks for him for coming on. And now we're going to be going to the Bucks representative, I guess, is the way to say it. I guess I can't say the Bucks blogger. But we're going to go get Davey Miller from 1420 AM The Breeze. I'll be right back.
You know what's funny is there's a bit of a, you know, and now the Milwaukee Bucks are on the clock, you know, we're doing this. It's kind of funny, but wouldn't it be nice if it was the Celtics leading off the conversation and then the Grizzlies and the Bucks, you know, we'll go 1, just as it will be on June 28th and work its way down. That wouldn't be bad. We could take that.
Yeah, the Bucks have had their number 1 pick. I'd hate to see them grab it again.
Yeah.
But I wonder what this fellow will say about the trade for Villanueva.
Yeah, we definitely
that worked out well.
Query him on that one. You know, and certainly they had some injury problems like we did this year. And I think that, you know, if anyone can point to injuries as a problem, I think, you know, they, you know, the Bucks along with the Celtics can probably are 1-2 in that department without a doubt. And certainly they're key players. You know, they didn't have as many scrubs to probably go down as we did, but you know, Villanueva and Red, and I mean, just it was. You look at the amount of injuries they had. And it was really staggering, I'd say.
Well, we were number one. They were number two, in terms of lost injuries. And Bogut went out, and he wasn't playing that badly either. He was averaging 9 rebounds, 12.3 points in 34 minutes. So, you know, he's really was a starter on that team for most of the season, I would say.
Yeah, that's true. He really fought through. I think, you know, as we got down to things, I think he was certainly a casualty of the Bucks wanting to improve their draft position. And it sounded as though he probably could have played if they really needed to. But, you know.
You think they would do that with a first-year player when they just want him to get as many games under his belt? Well, that's another good question we can ask.
We had 2 years. That was the second year. And plus, you know.
This was Bogut's second year? I'm sorry.
Yeah. But either way, you know, either way, this is a situation where, you know, they could use that Oden or Durant pick as much as anybody. And, you know, the one thing I heard a lot from going on the Bucks board was a lot of Bucks fans were hopeful of getting Durant, and then you know, going ahead and trying to you know, pair him with Bogut. So I don't know if they take him over Oden, but let's ask Davey and see what he thinks.
Hey guys, I'm back, and we're going to introduce Davey Miller from 1420 AM The Breeze. Davey, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Very good.
Well, we're sitting on pins and needles.
Houston's in Milwaukee.
Pardon?
Can you hear me okay?
Oh yes, we can hear you fine. I just wanted to, you know, we'll give Davey a little bit of an introduction, just for the fact that he grew up in Southern Indiana and once actually played basketball against Larry Bird. I think, you know, all Celtics fans would love to start with that story. Davey, if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of your gentlemen is cutting out on me, so hopefully you're hearing this. If not, go ahead and call my home phone.
No, we hear you fine. We hear you well.
Okay. Yeah, it was 1975, between my junior and senior year in high school. I'm from Bloomfield, Indiana. That's about 30 miles west of Bloomington. And, of course, that's the time that Indiana was starting to win their national championships under a young coach, Bobby Knight, who, at that time, I went to a lot of his practices as well at that time. Talk about a fiery coach. But anyway, summer of 75, between my junior and senior year in high school, my small town of about 2,000, and my childhood is exactly like the movie Hoosiers. we had a basketball tournament, and we invited all the area, you know, guys maybe 20, 21 years old that's been out of high school a couple of years, but, you know, everybody from different little towns brought their teams. And Larry brought his team. This is in 1975, and that team had 4 of the 5 starters that was in the championship game in 79. So, you know, 4 years earlier, they're traveling around Little Indiana playing everybody, getting that team chemistry going. So that was interesting sidebar. But anyway, played the game. I think he weighed about 195 pounds at the time. He could definitely shoot from just across half court. Played on a concrete pavement, wooden backboard, and he kind of dominated. You know, we stayed close about the first, I don't know, two-thirds of the first half, and then by the end, you know, they had a bunch of black guys. We're farm boys, and, you know, they had some seven-footers, and, you know, they beat us by, like, 30. But like I say, I played against the Birdman.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. and by the way, Davey sent us an email before. I was just going to say, but before you sent us an email before and saying that your Southern twang will come out every little bit. I did hear a little bit of it in there, so you're true to your roots, Davey. Not a problem.
I've lived in Wisconsin for the last 24 years, and I have since become a big Bucks fan, big Packers fan. Brewers fan and Badgers fan. So there's a lot of good sports up here in Wisconsin.
Well, let's go ahead and get right to the Bucks then. David, I mean, certainly, as we were talking before we brought you on, the Bucks had a really injury-plagued season right there with the Celtics in terms of number of injuries piled up this year and games lost. But we're both in the enviable position of having a couple, you know, swing players who are, you know, all-star players on the team, and you'd really like to pair them with one of the top players in this draft. If you have the number one pick, who would you take? Would you take Durant or would you take Oden?
Well, let me tell you this, and I really, you know, after thinking about it and listening to everybody, whoever does not take Oden is an idiot. And somebody else is second. I don't care if it's the Milwaukee Bucks who have Andrew Bogut, who is my favorite player in the league, and right now can be considered the best center in the East. He's our building block. He's our franchise. But if you got Oden up there, number one, and we get number one, you cannot pass on Greg Oden. Why? Because he's Bill Russell. He anchors. Now, do you hear me, everybody? He anchors. Nobody. Oden anchors. You take Oden number one, and you build around that. If you got a Bogut, you keep Bogut, and you build inside. Now you start building outside. Any more questions?
Tell us about the T.J. Ford trade. What did you think of that move?
T.J. Ford, I talked to him quite a few times. He's a great interview, good kid, a hard worker, one injury away from having his career ended. Great talent, great point guard. Better point guard than Mo Williams. We're probably, well, if you want to get to Mo later, we'll talk about contract comparisons to TJ. But TJ Ford, love him, wish him well. I think the trade was good because I think in the end, Charlie Villanueva is a stud, and we've not seen the best of his basketball yet. That was a straight-up trade. So, you know, we're excited about Charlie Villanueva along with Bogut, along with another big we're going to get in this draft. And that's going to be a nice little three-man rotation for the Bucks.
You think the Bucks are definitely going big?
Well, I mean, yes. They got a point guard problem. You got Mo Williams out there that you possibly got to sign. You got Chauncey Billups, who's playing the circuit. He said he wants to sign with the Bucks, so... You know, everybody's playing each other right now. There's not a whole lot of point guards out there. You go with Williams up to a certain point. I think after TJ money, anything over TJ money for Mo Williams, you jump off ship. That probably gets you about $8.5 million, $9 million a year. After that, you start looking elsewhere.
Yeah, he always seemed to be a shooting guard in a point guard's body, and there are a lot of those out there.
Well, Mo Williams is a basketball player. He's not a point guard. He's too small to be a two guard, but he's a basketball player. If his ego would allow it, he'd be the best sixth man in basketball, but he's got to be a point guard, so that's what he's going to be. He's 2 years away from being an elite point guard. He's still a chucker. He shoots it at the wrong time. He plays no defense. Michael Redd plays no defense, so if you sign Mo, you got your starting guard tandem that plays literally the worst defense in the NBA. Can you win a championship with that? Well, maybe with Bogut and Oden back there anchoring, but that'd be about the only way.
Aren't you supposed to ask the Suns that question? Well, I wanted to get over to the draft a little bit just to talk about the hot topic tonight has been Yi Jianlin. That's, by the way, is the third pronunciation I've tried out this evening. According to Eric Weiss, I guess that's going to be the final one. But, you know, he seems to be the hot topic. You know, you don't get a lot of chance to see this player because he plays overseas. You're always kind of thinking in the back of your mind whether or not you know, whether or not the competition he's been playing against is, you know, legit for him to be coming in, being considered an experienced player at 23 years old. Danny Ainge recently spoke on WEEI here in Boston, spoke in length about Yi having that, you know, more basically more professional experience than anybody coming out of the draft of the college ranks right now. I guess now that we find out that he's 23, I expect him to be much more ready, but I have major doubts. Do you take him number three?
No. And the reason I don't is because, one, I've never seen him play. I got YouTube highlights to look at. I've read the beautiful. I've seen some of the highlights. But I ain't taking nobody at three that I've not at least seen on television in a college game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as talent potential, who knows? I know what I have in Noah. I know what I have in Horford. I know what I have in Wright. So, no, I'm not taking Yee at three. I might take him at six, but I'm not taking him at three.
So who are you taking at three? You know, nail it down. You don't get a shot at Durant or Oden. You've got everybody else available to you at number three. Trading the pick is not an option. You know, who do the Bucks select if you're their GM?
Well, okay, if I can't trade down, which is what I try to do, at three, right now, today as we stand, probably the same as what it's been since this college season ended. I'm taking Noah. He's a rich man's garbage man. That's what I call him. He's a combination of Rasheed Wallace with his emotional fire. He's a combination of Bill Walton with his nonstop, never-stop energy. And he's a combination of Dennis Rodman, doesn't care if he gets 6 points and 15 rebounds. He's a garbage man. He does whatever it takes. He can guard all five positions during any stretch of the game. The Bucks need somebody that can do the garbage. They got scores. We don't need scores. We need somebody willing to do the garbage work and to have a power forward willing to do that alongside an Andrew Bogut. Yeah, I'm taking Noah at three. If they take Horford, I'm not crying the blues. That's a solid pick. I compare him to Baby Mags, Jamal Mabur. He's kind of a Baby Mags to me. Nice, solid, safe pick. Noah's the sexy pick, and in my opinion, the correct pick.
So it sounds like the Bucks are looking for size, which, you know, we heard from the Memphis blogger just before you came on, and he said pretty much the same thing about Memphis. You think that Villanueva can be moved to the three without a problem?
In his rookie year, he played the three at Toronto, and one time against the Bucks, he lit us up for 48 at the Bradley Center playing the three. Of course, anybody can light the Bucks up for 48 on a given night. But, yeah, CV, I think, is a major player. He's a better rebounder than you give him credit for. He's soft. You know, he's got some baby fat on him. But he, offensively skilled. Grew up in New York with Ben Gordon. Just an excellent skill set around the basket. Very high on Charlie Villanueva. I hope we don't package him in a trade, but we may have to. But that's for another subject.
You talk about guys coming into your building and killing you. You got a guy named Dan Gudzurek who seems to have career nights against the Celtics, although I watched quite a bit the last maybe 3 weeks of the season, and Gudzurek had some great games all over the league. Why can't he get any burn in Milwaukee?
Well, I'll tell you why.
Oh, did we lose you?
Hope not. If you do, you can call my home phone.
No, there you are. You're back. Excellent. Can you pick up right at the beginning of the answer of JB's question?
I've been the biggest Danny Gazzareach basher in the last 3 years. We should have signed Zaza Pachulia for $16 million less. He's 6 years younger, and he's more rugged. Anyway, that's water under the bridge. We have Danny Gazzareach, 4 years left, probably owe him roughly $24 million. So his contract's not going to kill you, but he's not contributing to his contract. The reason why, there's a dearth of talented centers in the Eastern Conference, and over the last 3 years, we've had most of them. Think about it. We've had Jamal McGlure. We had Zaza Pachulia. We got Danny Gazzareach. We got Andrew Bogut. Then we had Joe Smith and Brian Skinner kind of rotating in the mix there. And Danny just has not been able to break the lineup. He's not that good. I would like to trade him to the Celtics if you were willing for Ryan Domes.
Yeah, no. No.
No.
Oh, that's so classic.
That secret's out. So that secret's out. Well, then why did you ask me?
I love it. Well, I love it.
I think he's a hell of a player, but Domes,
he's got a lot of. He's, sorry.
No,
yeah,
no, no.
But we like Domes an awful lot here, and he's only in his second year. We nobody knows how good he's going to be yet, but boy, Gudzurek seems to me to be a great sixth, seventh, eighth man coming off the bench for you. And when we've seen him play here, he's been damn rugged. He's gone after the boards. He's blocked a couple of shots. He's been very, very active.
Well, he's gangly. He's not good in a half-court set. He's very energetic, but he plays under or he plays out of control. He's turnover prone. He accumulates fouls quickly. He'd be a nice in the eight-man rotation, I believe, of a Phoenix Suns, but really not in the direction the Bucks are going.
Hey, well, I'm glad you talked about a little bit about him, because I'll tell you, to me, he's been the biggest thorn in my side, Davey. I mean, he's been looking like Bill Russell every time he's played up against us. Between he and Zaza Pachulia, if they played 82 games against the Celtics, they'd be in the Hall of Fame by now, I think. But anyway, I want to digress for a second and take you into a different realm here. I know that right now you guys have Larry Krystowiak as the, I guess he's still the interim head coach, but there's some thought that Harris is Lenny Harris is gonna bring in somebody else and possibly even his dad. Who are you looking at? Who would you like to see them bring in to ride the bench there for the Bucks? And I mean, is Del Harris somebody you'd consider?
Del Harris is the father of the general manager Larry Harris, and there's rumor that he's going to become an assistant coach to Coach Krystowiak. Coach K got a 4-year contract. He's going to be our coach next year. The first 2 years are guaranteed. Years 3 and 4 is at a club option.
Good stuff. So, but does that seems a bit like I don't know how to best describe it, but it sounds like it's like having your father-in-law come on the bachelor party. You know what I'm saying? It sounds like it's a pretty dangerous situation for Larry K.
Yes and no. Other than the fact that I don't know if Del Harris wants to be a head coach again, and I think he loved his ties to Milwaukee, and he kind of wants to come home, kind of take it easy a little bit, probably. So I wouldn't really worry about the politics on the administrative side of things. I think as far as an assistant coach for the Milwaukee Bucks, we need some veterans like that. We always bring in these young guys that, you know, are trying to go up the ladder. We need some grizzle, you know. We need some toughness, and getting a Del Harris would be a key addition to the coaching staff.
Well, in terms of other additions to the team, it seems as though obviously defensively is where the Bucks, where I think it sounds like where you'd like to see the Bucks put their attention. The trade season coming up, and certainly free agents. Are there any acquisitions, any players you have your eye on that you think would be a good fit for this Bucks team?
Well, there's a rumor of signing Chauncey Billups as possibility.
Right.
We may go after Gerald Wallace of the Bobcats. As far as trades, there's rumblings possibly Michael Redd and Gazzarich and our number one for Kevin Garnett and fillers. There's always stuff like that going on out there. There's a rumor that Desmond Mason may be coming back as well.
He was quite a player for the Bucks there for a number of seasons. He did a number of pretty good job on Paul Pierce when they were when he was still with the team. So I don't know if I'd welcome that as a Celtics fan, but he certainly has lost his game when he left Milwaukee. It'd be good to see him recapture that. Davey, is there anything else that we have maybe left out of the picture that is the Milwaukee Bucks? I mean, certainly a lot of us go back to the '80s with some big clashes there with the Terry Cummings and the Sidney Moncriefs and the immortal Jack Sigma Perm. You know, is this a team that, I mean, to me, it seems as though that, like the Celtics, the injuries robbed them of what could have been a playoff season, and they are, really are, they are much better than the record indicates. Well, I mean, do you see this, do you agree with that assessment?
Well, yes and no, I would say. Injuries certainly played a part in our season. I believe even when healthy, we were maybe slightly above a 500 team, maybe a 43-44 win team. Certainly not in the upper to get a 4 seed or better. So there's still a lot of work to be done. Right now we only got 10 guys under contract. I mean, Charlie Bell, Mo Williams, Brian Skinner, Reuben Patterson, Earl Boykins, they're all free agents ready to run. So, you know, we've got 10 guys, actually 9 under contract, because Ersan Ilyasova, he's a restricted free agent, so I'm sure we'll match anything that comes down his way. But, no, we're not in that great a shape. We've got Bogut and Red and Charlie V. We got our pick coming up in the draft, and we might sign Mo Williams. But, you know, this is not going to be overnight for Milwaukee, sorry to say.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, and we know all about it since 86, so or 87, I should say. But, you know, we're actually going to have to go because we've got to get our next caller on the line. But, geez, Davey, you've been extremely entertaining. We really enjoyed having you on.
Well, thank you. I didn't mean to be entertaining. I wanted to be informative, but hey, I'll take you wherever I can.
Well, you're both, but I can tell you that the people, we have this, we have a chat room where people hang out when we're broadcasting, and everybody is lighting up in there. You know, just they would really enjoyed having you on as a guest, and speaking for JB and the Duke and myself, we did as well. It was a great interview.
Well, tell everybody I enjoyed it quite a bit.
All right, excellent.
Well,
so,
thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks,
and I think you're going to like that Gerald Wallace guy if you go get him. I wish the Celtics had room for him on the squad, but we are. That was Davey Miller from 1420 AM, The Breeze. He covers the Bucks, and dude played against Larry Bird. I mean, you know, what better way to tie him into this night? You know what I'm saying? So big thanks to Davey for coming on. I'm gonna step off again. I'm going to go get Casey Holdall from Oregon Live. He covers the Blazers, and I'll be right back. We're going to keep this bottom feeders on a roll. So we'll be back, and don't forget, we're still going to be here for taking calls afterwards. So if you came to listen to Thomas McKee from Beale Street Beat, if you're from a big fan of his blog and you're a Grizzlies fan, you could certainly call and sound off on that, as well as any Bucks fans wanting to call and add anything to Davey Miller's interview. You know, we are going to be taking calls. If you guys do a good job of keeping the phone lines busy, we might even stay on late tonight. We'd certainly be willing to do that, much to John's, what, three shows of Sopranos left, John?
Yeah, that's right, 3 left. So,
well, I hope you set your DVR, because
it
could
small,
be a crazy
keep
night.
Keep it short and to the point.
And before we go to Casey Holdall, I do want to just give everybody a reminder that we're going to have a lottery night show. It's going to start at 9 o'clock right after the lottery ends on Tuesday night. And, you know, we'll be here to console or celebrate with you, but we will be here. We're going to be going at least 2 hours on Tuesday night as well, depending on the good or the bad news and how that carries callers. But the callers are going to dictate that show, and we're looking forward to seeing you there. And a big thanks to Celtics Blog for putting up the post and a link over to the site here, as well as all the message boards around the internet for allowing us to you know, put our what might be considered spam on some boards, allowing us to advertise our show and get the fans over here, you know, because obviously we produce this as a fan, you know, from the fans' perspective as well, and we post on those message boards. So thanks to everybody, you know, for allowing us and helping us get the word out everywhere. So I'll be right back. I'm going to go get Casey. You guys, you know, hold the line.
One thing that Jug failed to mention, though, and I won't hold it against him until he comes back, is that, you know, Tuesday night we're still looking to get some more guests on. We're going to have Sean Grandy on it at some point during that night. Jeff Goodman has said that he's going to try to call in because he's got some responsibility to FoxSports.com writing about the draft lottery. So we're going to have a lot of different things going on, and you know, it's going to be great. We're going to try to add to that guest list, so stay tuned as we try to add more and more folks to capture what could be the biggest night in a lot of Celtics fans' lives. There's a lot of Celtics fans out there, JB, that forget about Burr. They really even remember, you know, Sherman Douglas days.
Yeah, well, we really will be looking forward to that Tuesday night, and you know, lots of media outlets are basing their whole summer and fall campaign on what draft pick we get. So there's a lot of money riding on it.
Yes, and there's no guarantee, obviously, that getting number one or number two is that. You know, as a guarantee that you will be a great team next year. You may be even better with someone like Yee or Brandon Light, or you know, all that's possible. But let's be honest. You know, I know I'm going to feel a heck of a lot better if that number one card, there's a Celtics logo coming out of it Tuesday night. I don't know about you guys.
Well, interestingly, you know, all three of the guys we've had on so far, and I suspect we're going to hear the same thing from the Blazer guy, they're looking to go big. Everybody needs a center this year. The Blazers have Jamal Magloire and Prisbilla. I don't think they've filled the bill there, but let's find out.
Well, yeah, I'm back, and with me is Casey Holdall from Oregon Live. Casey, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, excellent. It's our pleasure, and you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, who do you pick if you don't get, you know, numbers one or two. And, you know, we're talking a lot about the Yi Jianlin hype that's been coming along and everything else. You know, if you're picking number three, we'll get the standard question out of the way. And then we'll get to more in-depth talk about the Blazers. But if you're picking number three, you can't have Durant, Oden, you can't trade. Who are you taking?
Oh, man. I mean, from a personal standpoint, I would probably, even though it might be a little bit of a stretch at three, well, actually, I'll take that back. It won't be a stretch at three. I would take Al Horford at number three if I was the Blazers. That would probably be the guy I would take. Even though they already have Zach Randolph and there's some redundancy at the power forward position, I know for a fact that Kevin Pritchard, the general manager, is a big believer that you take the best player available regardless of position. So I think at that number three, you know, he's an interesting prospect, but where the Blazers are at right now, I can't see them taking on a guy like that who, you know, even if, you know, it's coming out that he's maybe a little more polished than people had thought, you still figure he's probably a couple years away. And, you know, with all the youth the Blazers already have right now, I just can't see them taking on another guy that is going to take another couple years to develop. So I would probably take Horford. I was going to say Corey Brewer because could really use a small forward, could really use someone that can lock down, defend. But if Horford's on the board, I think you got to take him at three.
Yeah, I personally am in agreement. Horford's my number three as well, but mostly because I think the Celtics are ready to start to compete, and I think they need a guy that's going to be ready. I don't think they need any more. You know, obviously Horford's still going to have to develop. All these guys are going to have to develop to some extent, but I think Horford's ready to give him hustle minutes. He's at a need position, and I think he'd fit well on the Celtics. Let me go to a question from a regular contributor to the show, Lance G. He sent in a question for you. It's kind of a you know, hypothetical question. So he says, Portland has a ton of promising rookies and some good players in Randolph and Roy. They get the third pick in the draft and draft Brandon Wright. Now they must address their Achilles heel outside shooting. Former Trailblazer and Oregon native Danny Ainge calls and offers Delonte West for Sergio Rodriguez. Are you interested?
No, not at all. I think Sergio Rodriguez, you know, maybe ask me in another 2 years if I'd be interested, and possibly. But I think right now, one, if you're working for the Blazers and you trade away Sergio Rodriguez right now, you're going to send the majority of your fan base into the stratosphere. As of right now, Sergio Rodriguez is probably one of the two or three most popular players on the team. People love the way he plays, and, you know, to trade him away at this point, even though you really need some outside shooting, it not only, like I said, are you going to piss off, you know, 9/10 of the people that go to the Rose Garden. But, you know, you're also possibly trading away a guy who, you know, I don't want to throw out Steve Nash, but he's going to be a pretty good point guard in the eyes of most people. You know, he's got great court vision. He's pretty fast. He's got nice handles. He's a guy, you know, at 20 that you probably want to hold on to for at least a couple of years before you even really consider trading him. And not to mention that Paul Allen played $3 million just this year to get the rights to be able to draft him anyway. So I don't think they're going to throw that $3 million down the drain. Not that Delonte West isn't a good player, but I think that right now they're pretty happy with Sergio Rodriguez. They want to get him in, you know, a whole season, get his conditioning up a little bit. And I think a lot of people, myself included, think that he could be a pretty special player. So as of right now, I would absolutely not do that. I wouldn't hang up the phone on you, but I'd maybe laugh you off a little bit.
Yeah, I fell in love with Sergio before last year's draft. I think he's a hell of a player, and I'll point out for anybody that doesn't know, in his rookie year, his assist-to-turnover ratio was 3-1. And the knock on him was that he was going to be out of control, that he was too wild, that, you know, those super passes that he was getting away with in the European leagues were going to cost a lot of turnovers. But a 3-1 turnover ratio for a rookie point guard is damn good. He was way much more under control than I expected.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of that goes to Nate McMillan, too, and you know, with Nate McMillan, if you don't play in control, if you turn the ball over, you're not going to see the floor. I mean, he was a point guard and during his playing days. He wants point guards who play like he did, with, you know, no turnovers, you know, tight defense, hustle plays all the time. And, you know, if you turn the ball over, you're, like I said, especially as a point guard, you're not going to see the floor. So with Sergio, you know, I think he's smart enough to know that maybe there are moves he would like to do, maybe there are angles that he would like to take, but he's not going to jeopardize, you know, what little playing time he got this year by going out and, you know, kind of flying off the cuff and not sticking to the constructs of Nate McMillan's offense. So I think, like I said, people are real excited about Sergio Rodriguez. You know, he's basically been playing pro ball since, you know, he's 14 years old in Europe, so... You know, he's probably wise beyond his years. One of his knocks this year was that his English was still a little suspect, and according to Nate McMillan, he'd have, you know, the guys on the floor when he was trying to call out plays that have a hard time understanding what he was saying. So, you know, there was that problem that hopefully will be rectified next year or by the time next year rolls around, assuming that his English is a little more up to snuff. And so, I mean, a guy like Sergio Rodriguez, I would say not completely untradeable, but 90% untradeable. It would have to be a nice deal to come along to have Sergio Rodriguez in a different uniform next year.
Casey, what I really want to know, first of all, it's a two-part question. Will you take back Sebastian Telfair as a return? You know,
I knew it was coming. I knew it was.
And you know, we're willing to take back some of his Glocks and semi-automatic pistols. We'll keep those, and you just take the player and the salary if we're willing to take him back. We're willing to do that for you.
Well, I'm sure some of his weaponry is still here in Portland somewhere, so I don't think we need to take any back. I'm sure he's got a stockpile somewhere here in the city. So, yeah, no, I will say that usually, you know, for the most part that I've been a Blazer fan, we're usually on the bad end of those trades. And, you know, this happened to be the one time where the Blazers actually, you know, got the good part of a trade. So we're feeling pretty good about that. I feel bad for you Boston fans out there, but not real bad. So.
Well, that trade went down, we're told, by people, you know, inside the organization to get rid of Ray LaFrance's extra $15 million. We need that money to pay Jefferson and West and Tony Allen and Ryan Gomes, all of whom can be extended this summer. And, you know, Danny was just under strict orders to do what he could. And, you know, he took a flyer on having Telfair included in the deal. But I think they were going to make that trade. And you guys, your salary structure... it's not a problem for you having Rafe hang around for two more years?
Well, you know, it doesn't help, but you know, it's, you know, I mean, Theo was, I mean, you know, you basically, you give up Theo and, you know, you, you basically pay an extra year, is I guess what I'm trying to say with Rafe. And you know, like I said, it doesn't help a whole lot, but the Blazers aren't too far over the cap right now. And Paul Allen isn't totally averse to going to luxury cap territory. So, I mean, it doesn't help. And I you know, if they had the chance to move Rafe, I'm sure they would take it. But, you know, they have a lot of young guys. Other than, well, you got Zach Randolph's contract, which is rather large. You have Darius Maz's contract, which is about $7.5 million a year, and they're getting nothing for that right now. So, like I said, it doesn't help, and, you know, they're not exactly going to be big players on the free agent market, aside from trying to make a run at Rashard Lewis this summer. But, you know, they're not in horrible financial position right now. They're definitely not in great financial position either. And having that extra, you know, that albatross of Rafe's contract, you know, I think they're willing to eat it as long as maybe they can get just a little bit of production out of Rafe next year. And I think that's what their real hope is that he'll be able to get healthy enough to where, you know, maybe he'll be able to come in 15 minutes a night, you know, maybe provide a little outside shooting, maybe, you know, play a little better defense than Zach Randolph, which is, you know, for Rafe to play better defense than Zach, that's saying something, I think, more about Zach Randolph's defense than Rafe LaFrenz's defense. But I think, you know, with his contract, you know, it's good and bad. It's the reality of, you know, the NBA 2007, that, you know, you got these huge contracts that are guaranteed, and you've got to ride them out, and then, you know, when they come off the cap, that's great, you know. you got all the extra money to re-sign guys, so.
Well, we're not going to trade for Rafe LaFrance. I don't care what you say. We're not going to trade back.
I think it makes some sense for Boston to get Rafe back. I don't know. You might consider.
Tell you what, we'll send Bassey your way, and you can send Rafe our way.
Hey, I do it. You know, if
and you have to assume you have to assume the contract though. you have to assume the financials. That's right.
Oh, well.
But we don't have to.
Rafe's a nice guy, so I'd rather have Rafe around town than Sebastian. So,
yeah, if he ever got healthy, he's a pretty good player. Very good passer. He can fill the lane. He can block shots coming in off the weak side. I don't think he was ever used very well in Boston. They had him standing out at the three-point line. He got pretty frustrated here. But look, with bad wheels, he's no use to anybody. We found out with Theo Ratliff. I don't even know if he ever came back from Bermuda.
Yeah, Theo, you know, that's too bad for Theo. He had, you know, when he first came to Portland, you know, he had a great, you know, it was the same with Darius Miles, you know, he had a great half of one season, you know, and then he got a contract when they didn't, you know, they resigned him really before they needed to, and then, you know, he broke down promptly right afterwards. So, you know, no disrespect to Theo Ratliff, you know, when he's healthy, you know, he's a game changer on defense, but he just ain't healthy anymore.
I wonder if he's taken lessons, if he had some coaching from Purvis Ellison.
Yeah, that's possibly. You never know. I know he has that energy vitamin drink that he sponsors, and it doesn't seem to be doing him a whole lot of good anymore. So you might try something.
Well, he claims he's coming to camp this year in the best shape of his life, and you know he'll be playing for another contract. So there is some hope. But I hope we don't make the same mistake you did and sign him too soon.
Yeah, I think you know, anyone that makes that mistake now, they pretty much deserve anything they get. So,
now tell me something about LaMarcus Aldridge. Can he play center in this league? Is that where you guys expect him to play?
He can play center. I think he'd be helpful for any team at center. I think he'll be a much better power forward, and I think that the Blazers are going to do their darndest to make sure that he's playing power forward next year if they get the opportunity. He can definitely play center. You know, he's the kind of kid that he's going to play no matter where you put him. I know he's told me before that he prefers to play at the power forward position. I think it gives him a little more advantage at that power forward with his size than at center. He's not exactly a guy that can bang, really, at least not at this point in his career. But, you know, he's a guy that really, you know, sky's the limit. He can, you know, it sounds kind of trite, but he can really do whatever he puts his mind to at this point in his career. He's still young. He's got that size. You know, he's supposedly a gym rat. He works out, you know, nonstop. He had that little problem with his heart that I guess they got figured out, and supposedly that's not going to be a problem. So he can play center to answer your question, but I think that everyone is in agreement that he'd be better at power forward. And, you know, the Blazers have Joel Prisbilla, and, you know, if he can stay healthy, he's not a bad defensive center. He's not a bad guy to pair up with a guy like LaMarcus. You got two excellent shot blockers if you have Joel Prisbilla healthy at center and LaMarcus Aldridge healthy at power forward. So
where does that go? Where do you guys hope to get us at? And what do you want to get back for him?
Well, I think, you know, personally, I like Zach Randolph, and I like his game. If he would just play some defense, I think that, you know, he's top 10 low post scorer in the game. I'd even put it in top 5, but then I'm sure you'd throw some names at me that I'd have to renege on. But I think what they're looking to get back for him is, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think that they would take anything that they could get for Zach Randolph that wasn't some kind of crazy, insane, long contract, even though Zach Randolph's contract still got another, I think, 3 or 4 years on it, getting paid in excess of, I think, $18 million at the end of the contract. I think, you know, what they would like to do, as I mentioned before, they would like to get some kind of three-way deal going to where they could get Rashard Lewis from Seattle, re-sign Rashard Lewis, and then send Zach Randolph to maybe a team like the Bulls, who maybe need some low-post scoring, who already, you know, have some defense in the post. And then I'm not sure exactly who Seattle would get in that situation. But I know that, you know, I'm not exactly sure that at this point they're dead set on getting rid of Zach Randolph. I think that, you know, they see him on the court. They see, you know, what he brings. He, you know, from an off-the-court standpoint, you know, he's never going to be your poster boy. But, and, you know, he did have some problem this year, but, you know, compared to other years, you know, it was a good year for Zach Randolph. So I think that they're not exactly sure what they want to do with him yet. I think if a decent deal came along, they would trade him simply because they really want to get LaMarcus Aldridge into that three spot. I think they, or not three, but excuse me, that four spot. I think they believe that he is the power forward of the future for the Blazers. So, you know, if nothing else, I think that they might be leaning towards trading him just because of LaMarcus Aldridge, not so much because of Zach Randolph. And what they would take back for him, you know, I think they would like, you know, a decent player. But, I mean, you know, with as much as he's getting paid, either you're going to take back a guy who is a decent player, got a big contract and is not a decent player anymore, or a combination of smaller contracts. And I don't think at this point they're really interested in taking back a whole lot of other contracts. But, I mean, you know, that's the way the game is played. You got a guy with a big contract. Got to take back the contracts to get rid of him. So. Oh,
we know all about that.
It's too bad that
your big contract didn't have a drinking problem, because then you could get him to agree to an illegal buyout for about $5.3 million for a few years. And, you know, that alone is a success for the Danny Ainge, you know, era. I don't know why he doesn't get more, you know, more props for having finagled his way out of the Vin Baker contract. But,
yeah,
you know, people forget that way too quickly, that, you know, his hands were tied the minute – hog-tied the minute he came in. And the fact that we even have money to, you know, to spend. I guess people look at the Wally Szczerbiak and, you know, Rafe LaFrentz and now Theo Ratliff trades as – you know, maybe not so great. But, you know, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't world. If you're not playing well, as I'm sure you can, you know, you can relate to. And, you know, how hard is it? Let me ask you this one last question, and then we're going to go. We have to go to our commercial break and get some calls in here from listeners who are chomping at the bit. But what I wanted to ask you was, you know, how hard is it to cover a team that has been struggling as much as the Blazers have as of late? Because we had a question last week just talking about asking, you know, our guest Scott Souza from the Metro West Daily News and the Boston Herald. They asked him, you know, how much do the media actually prefer the team not be doing so well because they have more to write about? And, you know, I think the overwhelming answer to that was, well, you know, you get your stories however you get your stories. But is it hard when the team is not successful to follow them day in and day out and come up with refreshing material?
It's definitely more difficult than when they're getting better. I think, you know, it's difficult in that you know, everyone wants to, you know, follow a winner, and, you know, it's more fun to write stories and, you know, to do coverage when the team is doing well. But also, on top of that, when the team is not doing well, you know, you got guys in the locker room who are pissed off, you know, and rightfully so, and, you know, they don't want to talk about how, you know, they just got rung up by 40 points, you know, and they don't want to talk about how everyone thinks they're being overpaid and how they're a pariah to the city. So, you know, not only do you have to deal with, you know, just the losing all the time and seeing games that are not enjoyable because, you know, they're getting their keys kicked in, but you also have to deal with the players themselves and the coaches too. And, you know, it's always more fun to work with people that are in a good mood. And, you know, when you're working, you know, with a guy like Nathan McMillan, who's, you know, really passionate about the game and who really expects a high level from his players, and, you know, he's not getting that, it transfers over to, you know, to the media. And, you know, you have to, you know, you maybe sometimes have to press on things that you prefer not to press on. And, you know, you're going to have to deal with these people for, you know, years. And, you know, you don't want to burn bridges, you know, when you don't have to. So it's definitely more difficult. I know that Jason Quick, who is the beat writer for the Oregonian for the Blazers, is quite good at what he has been doing it for about 8 years now. Yeah, you know, we talk sometimes, and he was mentioning that last year was terrible to follow the Blazers. You know, they had nothing going. It seemed like there were any prospects to get better any time in the near future. They had, you know, Darius Miles, who just had microfracture. Well, I guess at that point he hadn't had microfracture surgery, but, you know, he's had knee problems. He's been playing to, you know, anyone's potential. At Zach Randolph getting in some trouble. And he basically had a locker room full of guys that didn't want to be there. And, you know, they're chomping at the bit to get out the door. So, but with this year, you know, they still lost a lot of games, obviously. You know, I think they tied for the sixth worst record. But, you know, at least there's some optimism. You know, they see these young guys, and you can see that, you know, at least they've got a plan now. You know, they got a new GM. You know, they're going to have a new president eventually. And, you know, you can see from the outside that, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel at this point. Whereas last year, I don't think you could even claim that there was, you know, a candle light at the end of, you know, any kind of thing. So it's to answer your question, it's much easier. It's much more fun. And it's much easier to develop relationships with players and coaches when they're winning games, or at least when they're competitive in games.
Well, if there's any chance, Casey, that you guys are looking through any blinds and any windows in this upcoming draft season, please let us know at Celtic Stuff Live. We'd love to help break the story on this coast, at least.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let anyone in that little media room there, at least not until they get the blinds. So yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, and another thing to mention real fast is that the relationship with the media, with the Blazers, is far improved than it was last year. And, you know, the Blazers deserve a debt of gratitude from the media for that. They've really made a concerted effort to kind of change the dynamic between the media. And I think it's reaping benefits for the team and for the media and for the fans who want to know the stories from the team. So.
Excellent, Casey. Well, thanks on behalf of John, JB, and myself. Here at Celtic Stuff Live, I wanted to thank you for coming on. You're a great guest, and you know, at least everybody tonight has been sympathetic. You know, we're all kind of in this camaraderie right up until Tuesday night, when the Celtics will get the number one pick, and your Blazers will be down around 4 or 5.
Well, you can call me back when the Blazers get that pick, and I will be sure not to rub any salt in your wounds. So.
Well, you know, by that time, I'm going to be hiding underneath my turtle shell if that happens.
Yeah,
but
that's a good point.
Yeah, so. we're prepared. The bomb shelter is ready. thanks again, Casey. Thanks for coming on, and, you know, good luck on Tuesday night, but not better luck than us.
Great. I appreciate it. Hey, we'll take the second pick. We'll take Durant. Never mind.
Hey, that sounds good. That's a win-win.
Fantastic.
All right, that was Casey Holdall from Oregon Live. He covers the Blazers. And, you know, we are going to go right to break because we're going to come back. We're going to take your calls. We've got a half an hour scheduled to the rest of the show, but we got a lot to get to. We have the second half of E's email on Yi Jin Lin. And then we also have a... I don't know. Is it a disturbing voicemail? I'm not even sure how to put it. But I'm starting to wonder if it isn't Bill Simmons, because we have to get to Simmons' article as well. He's been throwing flaming poop from the West Coast for about a year and a half now. And then finally, Celtics Kid in the chat room sent me a little link, or not a link, but sent me a little heads up on some Gary Tanguay quotes from an interview on Andy Gresh's ESPN radio show today. So, I mean, there's plenty to talk about, and we're taking your calls. You can give us a call, the toll-free line. You should know it by now. It's 866-751-9649. So, you know, phone lines are open. You can place that call during the commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to get to all of those topics. I mean, I suppose John and JB have some ideas for what they want to talk about in the second half of the show as well. We'll be right back.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see, and digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
I'm at a 1 million and a half, 1-1, 1-1, go ahead, thank you, 1-1 now, 50 now, 50 last call, sold 1,000,001, thank you, bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
We're back from the break. That's the first time we've come back in the second hour of the show not listening to The Sopranos, I think. At least since the new season began, and they're wrapping up. Everybody's excited. It always happens every week at 9 o'clock. People start dropping out of the pit. I can say that I won't be entirely disappointed when the season's over, but in some ways I will be. Yet, maybe you haven't watched the show, but I don't want to be the spoiler, but, what Christopher Moltisanti, that's it. I'm sorry. I won't say anything else in case you haven't caught up with last week's. John, I know you have some love for Bill Simmons, and I want to get over to his recent, I don't know, I guess it was a trade idea. And I don't know. I don't want to totally expound on my Bill Simmons thoughts because I think he's very entertaining, but sometimes he just makes my skin crawl. But he says, speaking of trades, if the Celtics get the number 2 pick and take Kevin Durant, here's the deal. I want them to offer Golden State. Paul Pierce, Bassey Telfair's gun collection, and the number 32 pick for Jason Richardson, Monta Ellis, and the number 18 pick, and Sarunas Yasikevich's expiring contract. And while I'm doing requests for the Celtics, here's another one. Wick, Danny, and Doc, you guys all need to shut your traps. Seriously, stop giving the interviews. Stop telling your disgruntled fan base that you could have made the playoffs if not for so many injuries. Stop raving about your fantastic young nucleus of players and how they're in such high demand. Stop talking about Doc's great coaching when he won 56 games in 2 seasons. Stop sounding so freaking smug about everything. Just stop. Don't say another word until May 23rd, and if you don't start showing some humility and urgency about what happened in the past 2 seasons, and you don't start recognizing that your fans are legitimately concerned that none of you have any idea what you're doing, here's what will happen. You're going to get written off by the majority of your entire fan base, basically everyone with an IQ higher than 80, until all 3 of you are gone. And he goes on to make the analogy to Jeremy Jacobs and the Bruins, which I think is a fault. I think there's a little fault to that, just given the fact that where the NHL was going in general is not the same as where the NBA in general is at today, and that does play a major part. However, if this, you know, if the team doesn't dig its way out, I think, you know, Bill's doomsday prediction is right. But, you know, I don't know. I have some problems with the fact that every single trade idea he comes up with involves somebody that he fell in love with on the West Coast. And, you know, I wish he would just admit that he's tainted. He's a West Coast guy now. Just own that, you know. Stop trying to be New England, because you're not New England anymore. It's in your soul, but it's just not coming out of your mouth or in your words anymore, in my opinion.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, he's not even the number one public enemy for me this week. Anyone who saw the site this week obviously knows that I'm not all that happy right now with the sporting news. So let me just throw that out there, first of all. I think that cover was bogus and a sham. But let's talk about Bill Simmons a little bit. Bill Simmons writes, first of all, I don't think he's that far off base in one respect. I think that Monta Ellis might be a hell of a player, might be the best point guard to come out of that draft. There was a posting on Celtics blog the other day, the top point guards under 25, and made a new list of the top point guards under 21. Rajon Rondo and Monta Ellis were 1-2 in that. So I think that Monta Ellis is a nice player. I think 18 could get you a good player in this draft. I think Jason Richardson does a lot of things that Paul Pierce can do as well. He's got a hefty contract, but he's the type of guy that 3 years from now, that may look like a small contract. But that said, let's talk about the larger issue of what Bill's writing. I think Bill, this is a guy who, you know, a number of years ago was suckling from the Celtics press teat and, you know, had no qualms about doing it. Now all of a sudden he's turned into the biggest critic of Doc Rivers and is wondering, why isn't the Boston media questioning this? It's because, Bill, you were spun yourself. And it's only the last couple of years, or last couple year and a half, I guess you could say, as you pointed out, that he's changed his tone. And now, well, how can you guys believe this? Da, 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 da. The guy is so inconsistent. I don't even know where he stands on anything anymore. One week he says, well, this Western Conference final doesn't matter. It's, you know, or semifinal, it's over. You know, who cares what's happened? No one. Then 2 weeks later, this is the most exciting basketball I've seen. And, I mean, just shut up. I'm so tired of it. You are just worthless. You know, at one point, being the Boston sports guy meant something to Bill Simmons. Now it just means cashing another check from Disney and finding ways to increase his revenue streams. I'm sick of it. I mean, the guy, I'm fine with him making money. That's not a problem. But if you're going to try to come off as some sort of educated fan about what's going on there, maybe you ought to at least be consistent for once and say, if you're going to say one thing about the playoffs and whatever, at least admit you're wrong. And he always seems to somehow, he's ahead on things and, oh, now everyone likes it, so now I don't like this. Or, I mean, he's like this with everything, whether it's pop culture or sports or I mean, he knows very little outside of what it is, that little sphere of influence when it comes to the NBA, and now he's showing even less knowledge in that realm. I mean, just write your screenplay and get out of sports, Bill, because I'm really sick and tired of it. It's got to stop. Just go away.
Wow, that's been waiting to come out. I want to clarify the fact that my issue with that trade idea is that I don't see any way in hell that Golden State is going to make that deal. They're not going to give up on Monta Ellis for Paul Pierce and Sebastian Telfair. It's not going to happen. Absolutely not. But anyway, John, I think you said it all. I don't unless JB wants to defend Bill Simmons.
Well, sure. You know, I worked with Bill years ago. We came out of the same message board on AOL, and you know, I still find him entertaining. I admire a writer who's willing to think outside the box, come up. Some of the ideas are scatterbrained, perhaps, but he's a clever young man, and I enjoy his writing. I don't think he's as out of touch nearly as John says, and I think, you know, it's almost logical for somebody to give Danny and Doc a couple of years and then to get a little fed up about what's going on. And he's really, you know, warning them about the fan base. And I think it's absolutely true. If this team comes out next year and goes 4-12 or 8-16 or whatever it is to start the season, you know, the fan interest is going to drop off the table. They've got people calling round the clock for their season ticket holders, trying to get them to re-up. They've got these calls coming now with a pre-recorded Delonte West voice, and you get a you know, quasi personalized phone call from Delonte asking you to sign up for your season tickets again next year. You know, this team is about marketing, and you know, they're running this out there now, and everybody's got their fingers crossed, and they're holding their breath. So I'm not sure he's far off on that, and I'm not sure he's far off comparing them to Jeremy Jacobs. We'll see. You know, if they're willing to spend some money, if the team comes out 16-8. You know, do they trade Ratliff's contract to bring in a 3 or 4 year deal at $12 million to get a real player, a veteran player on the team? So, you know, school is out, but I still enjoy Bill, and you know, most of the people out there like he and Peter Vexi, you know, who's controversial and says seemingly some crazy things sometimes, but. You know, they're creative people. There's very far and few between in the sports writing profession that actually can make you laugh once in a while.
Well, I'm going to give Simmons credit that he is a funny guy, and you know, I do like some of his reading, but at the same time, you know, I don't know, it's the same pop culture shtick, so. I'd like to see him evolve a little bit, is what I'm getting at. And I think John is too when he's talking about the screenplay. Like, get it done. You know, take the next step. But, you know,
if you want to write about sports, write about sports. You know, my problem is he's inconsistent. One week he hates the playoffs, and next week he loves it. You know, one week, you know, the Suns are done, now they're back. The Spurs are done, now they're back. I mean, I don't even know where he stands. And, you know, it's one thing if he wants to bash Doc Rivers, at least be consistent about that, too. And bash Danny Ainge. I mean, he was a big believer in what Danny was doing. You know, and if he disagrees with it, then say, I agreed with it at one point, but now I disagree with it. Or, you know, at least be honest with the fans and the readers about where he stands on things. He doesn't. He just, you know, he glosses it over. And then if he did, you know, if he was right on a prediction, it's as though he invented the polio vaccine. The guy, he's a writer, and he's very talented. And at one point, he was in touch with what Boston fans were thinking. But that time has passed, and he's got to let go of that. And it's time to move on. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do want to add one quick thing, though, before we move on to something else. I think he does have a good point when it comes to the spin that's going on out of Danny and Wick and Wallace and these guys. There is a huge difference between 1-2 and 3-4-5. And to think it's anything else is silly. I don't understand, you know, there's a lot of spin going on to this ownership and leadership of this team. And at some point, it's fine and I can take it, but they've got to get real and they've got to be honest about where they're going with this franchise. We talked last week about, well, we're a running team, now we're not a running team. We were a slowdown team, now we aren't a slowdown team. Tell us what the deal is, you know. We shouldn't have to go 4 months before figuring out that we're going to change and we're going to slow things down without, you know, without Telfar, or go with West. And West wasn't a point guard. Now he is a point guard. He's a combo guard. Now he's not. I don't even know. I mean, maybe Bill Simmons is running the team. I don't know what's going on. So I think he does have a good point with that, but it's...
Well, yeah, not every point is a bad point. And he does come up with some good ideas. And one of the good ideas, I think JB was alluding to just some of his creative thoughts. I mean, he had some really good ideas about how to reshape the NBA to make it more fun for the fan to watch. And I think he is really in touch with entertainment. And, you know, somebody, Paul Shirley, he's not playing for the Suns anymore. He's now overseas in Spain. And he gave credit in a recent email that he sent to Slate. .com, and the beginning of the email addresses, you know, some social issues that I think everybody should kind of just take a look at, because I agree with Paul Shirley in the fact that it's about time people just opened up and talked about things honestly when it comes to race. And I think Paul Shirley's statements are pretty progressive that way, and it's time. I'm not going to get into it on this show. We're here to talk about the Celtics, but I just wanted to point it out to the people that listen to the show that that's an article you should definitely read. Again, it's on slate.com. You can find the link on the Celtics blog list of links that FL Celts fan compiles every week. And good find, Shirley. I really enjoyed that article. But he gave credit to Bill Simmons for coming up with the play-in tournament. And Paul Shirley kind of advanced on that, saying, you know, overseas, if you don't play well, then you get moved down. It would be like getting kicked out of the NBA down to the CBA if you didn't do well. So anyway, you should check all that out. It's pretty good stuff.
If you want. So let's move on. Let's move on from you know where we are right now. And first of all, this caller is out there. We'd love to have the callers out there. And make sure that everybody out there is going to tune in Tuesday night at 9 o'clock and finds out exactly, you know, where everybody sits and calls in and sees how Sean Green and Jeff Goodman think about that. And we are obviously taking sponsors. We'd like sponsors for our draft night show. If you're interested in that, contact us. Contact at sellthestufflive.com and do that. But we want callers, folks. Guys, come on. Call in. Let us know what you think. What do you think about this Yee stuff? Are these bloggers wet? What's going on?
Well,
I'll give you a topic too. If anybody has seen Chad Ford's Insider, this half an article up on ESPN by Chad Ford about Yee.
Oh no, JB.
Well, look, who was it last year that worked out Rajon Rondo when nobody else was paying any attention to him, and said
but
that
everybody's
Rondo
paying
was,
attention to Yee. Don't you think? I mean, everybody's paying attention. He's getting all kinds of hype. I don't think anybody's missing on this guy. I mean, unless they
Boston,
take him at number three.
Well, in Boston, he's getting some hype because Danny's gone out there a couple of times, but I'm not sure that anybody else around the league is talking about him. But I just thought I'd point it out that, Chad went out on a limb last year for Rondo, and this year it seems to be. And I wondered if anybody out there that had read the whole Insider, I don't have the subscription, would want to call up and talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, the problem with Chad is Chad Ford is that ever since he, I think he moved to Massachusetts to marry Darko Milicic at one point. Since he hitched his wagon to Darko, I mean, the guy's credibility has been shot, and it's too bad because I think he does have some good insights and has accessibility to players and to workouts that most guys don't.
Everybody's fallible.
Right, everyone's fallible, and he's burned that bridge. Everybody thinks of Chad Ford as the Darko guy, and that's really too bad because he does have good insight, but. I think the truth on Yee is somewhere between what Chad wrote up, that glowing piece, and what Draft Express wrote up, and if he's 25 years old or 29 or 35 like Greg Oden, then so be it. But we need to have somebody who can play tomorrow and can contribute to this team. We all know that.
Well, I'm gonna throw out some information on Andy from Andy Gresh's ESPN radio show today. Thanks to C-Kid and the Pit for bringing this up to our attention. But apparently Gary Tanguay was on the show, and I guess there were some other media guys on the show, basically just talking about the draft and what happens Tuesday night. Tanguay said that if the Celtics get the second pick, that they are definitely going to trade it. And I guess he went on and said that this was all agreed upon by Doc, Danny, and Paul Pierce because, quote, they do not want to wait on Durant. He needs to add weight. So, right. And I guess another quote was, if they don't get Oden, it could mean there are jobs. I didn't listen to it myself, so I'm not gonna tee off on this one, but it may be Paul Pierce that doesn't want to wait, but I can't imagine that anybody in that front office, unless they're going to go and get Durant, that would be, I mean, not Durant, Garnett. If they were going to use Durant to go get Garnett, then I can see it. You know, then I can see, okay, then they have something already in place. This deal is going to happen if they get Durant. Okay, fine. But if they get Oden, they want to stay with what they have. But I don't know. I don't know how you give up on Durant.
Let me start. Let me tee off on it. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Wait, I mean, first of all, and with all due respect to Gary, we've had Gary on the show, and but he did give us the bone on bone, and that has been, I don't want to say pretty soundly rebooked, but a lot of people are saying that that wasn't the case, and Gary is known to say things you know, on his show, and I think, you know, sometimes you just get sometimes overflowing with the mouth and say things that aren't necessarily the case, but if they are considering trading Kevin Durant, you know, and they're just already going to move the pick if they don't get Oden, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. And they should all be fired. That should mean their jobs. I think Gary's right. Yeah, it will mean their jobs because they should all be fired if they trade Kevin Durant for a bag of Spaldings, you know, and you know, some extra ammo for Sebastian Telfair. That's the dumbest thing ever.
So wow. Then all of a sudden you'd be on the Bill Simmons bandwagon. What a flip-flopper you are, Duke.
Well, I think I have good reason in that case. I think I might. Oh, wow. That's disgusting.
First thing, John, when we had Gary on the show, his point was that we shouldn't expect, and this is how it came up in context, we shouldn't expect much of a season out of Wally Szczerbiak next year because his knees aren't going to hold up because of the bone on bone. And he was 100% right on when nobody else was talking about it.
Well, it was an ankle, though. It wasn't the knee. His knee never gave him a problem.
He was having knee problems before the ankles were bothering him.
But it wasn't because of bone on bone. That was something that Gary had said that wasn't the case. And when we had Souza on later on, he said he hasn't heard anything like that from the Celtics. And other people who've been around the team who we've talked to have also said that they've never heard that as being tied with Wally Szczerbiak. I mean, and I don't know where Gary got it. Maybe he heard it offhand from somebody. And I'm not saying he's lying. But
We went back into the news article archives and found out that he had almost all of his cartilage removed from that right knee. So he was playing with bone on bone. But his point was, and it stands up, that we weren't going to get much of a season out of Szczerbiak. Now, whether the ankle injuries are related to the knee problems or not...
Well, it is connected to the hip bone.
Well,
that's what
know,
it is.
If you can't move your knee and you can't come down in a certain way without pain, you might just as be likely to turn that ankle.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what that connection is, but he was definitely having knee problems before the ankle ever bothered him.
Well, I'm not ready to give an attaboy to Gary on that. I think you have to prove.
I think he called the right player with a history of injuries, and. You know, and the bone-on-bone thing is just I don't think it was meant to be what it wound up being. You know, I think it was kind of it's a way of saying that, you know, the guy's basically got the cartilage worn down significantly. And everybody already knew about that. They came up on the x-ray and, you know, to defend, you know, Gary a little bit in that way. I mean, I don't think he was throwing us in our young, budding career as, you know, internet radio host, you know, a bone on bone, so to speak. You know what? I should just stop right there. We're going to go to the call. You're on Celtic Stuff Live. Welcome.
How you doing? It's the ubiquitous Frank. But something you said just forced me to call in.
Well, Frank, we love to have your calls, so sound off.
I would trade Durant, too. I don't think he's ready. I think he's thin. I think he's a, you know, great offensive talent, but... I don't think he and Pierce would play together very well. I think they couldn't share the ball. And so I think if I could get, just to throw out a couple of hypotheticals, trade Ratliff, Szczerbiak back to Minnesota and Durant for Kevin Garnett, I think I'd do that. If I could trade Durant to Phoenix, where he's a perfect fit, for, say, Sean Marion and Phoenix's three picks, one of which is going to be like 6, 7, or 8, plus two more first rounders, giving them four picks in this in a strong draft, three in the first round and a good second rounder, plus Marion to play together with Pierce. I think I'd do that. So I think there are a number of plausible scenarios where I would trade Durant. I don't think it's crazy at all.
Would you want to
trade? I've been saying that for about 2 months, Frank. Again, we're on the same wavelength. I don't see how they can keep him and Pierce on the same team.
Yeah, they both have to have the ball. They both like to post up. Durant likes that right side. Pierce likes the left side a little bit better, so I suppose you could post one on one side and one on the other, but it's just not a good... Durant is not the kind of guy who plays well without the ball. I mean, he'll get a few spectacular, slams on fast breaks off passes from Rondo, but he's not going to, an alley-oop kind of plays, but he's not going to score. He's not Kirilenko, and he's not going to score, move without the ball and cut and, score that way. It's just not his game. And he's getting... And the other thing about Durant is that he's really a two or a three. He's not a four. He's too skinny to be a four.
He could be a four in time, but you're right. He's not going to come right into the league and play solid at the four, at least not on a team that wants to make some noise in the playoffs, not as a starter anyway. But I don't even think that they necessarily expect him to be a starter. I mean, he could be the scorer off the bench that this team needs, and he would fit in pretty well that way, at least for the short term. And then you find out how good he is. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to go with this, but if you are going to trade him, I mean, I kind of like the sound of the Phoenix trade in some ways, but in other ways, I shudder at the thought of Pierce defending at the two with Marion at the three. I mean, I know they can swap off a little bit in their coverage, but I don't see it working. I don't see it working
Marion is tremendous. I mean, that's one of the reasons you get Marion, because now they have somebody who can guard besides Tony Allen, who can guard the other team's best player.
Right, but then you might as well put Tony at the two. I mean, obviously not. You can't say Tony's better than Paul, but I think you hear what I'm getting at in terms of the fact that, I mean, Paul, even if they swap, it's still going to be an issue. It's going to be a matchup issue with Pierce at the two, I think.
Well, it's going to be – let me give you the other side of the coin. I mean, this may be dangerous with Doc Rivers, but – the nice thing about Marion is that he gives you the option of going big and having Marion at the three, or he has the option gives you the option of going small with Jefferson at center and Marion at power forward, Pierce at the three, and then you have your power lineup. So, but I was just calling in to react to your statement about Durant. I would trade him too.
Yeah. Well, I think you may
for the right package. I mean, I'm not going to trade him for a bag of Spaldings, but. I would certainly trade him for Garnett, and I'd certainly trade him for Marion and the three Phoenix picks because,
we don't have enough room on our roster to do that. They're going to have to take some. I mean, we're going to have to package other guys
we have to cling desperately to Alan Ray. I mean, you can't just wave people like that.
No, you definitely can.
We've got plenty of room on this roster. You could wave the last five players on this roster, and it wouldn't make any difference. Are you kidding? There's plenty of room on the roster.
Well, yeah, in a way, but not for more youth. I mean, I think you've got to bring in more than just one veteran and a bunch of picks.
There's youth. Suppose you could get Sergio Rodriguez with that number 24 pick from Phoenix. I mean, suppose you could get a Mike Conley Jr., who I think is going to be an absolutely spectacularly good player. Suppose you could get Spencer Hawes. I mean, more youth. Durant is more youth. He's 19 years old.
But it's one player. I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think you can develop all those guys. Do you know what I mean? Like, the perimeter guys like Alan Ray and stuff like that, I mean, you're kind of developing them, but you're not expecting them to be major contributors down the line. You bring in three first-round picks in a deep draft, and, these guys are going to have to, they're going to have to find a way to get these guys minutes to develop them, especially if they want them to be worth anything in trade, if they don't have, room for them, later on. Roster.
But the idea of getting Marion is to win now. You put him together with Pierce, and you've got your all-star wing defender, and you've got your scorer. I mean, who's more mature, Marion or Durant? I mean, Marion is a mature, experienced player, not Durant.
Well, I think you're right about that.
Even though you're adding your draft picks, you're still adding. They're going to be adding young players anyway. They're going to be adding two. They're going to be adding Durant and plus whoever they pick with 32. So why not go for two more young players? Bring him into camp, send a couple of guys down to the D-League for a while.
Well, Phoenix could wind up with the Atlanta's pick if it's outside the top three. Let's say they get 4 or 5.
Right.
We would probably only get that one pick plus Marion coming back.
I think we get them all. We get them all. Well, Phoenix can't afford to pay the other two.
Well, even if we only got one... if we could wind up with Yee and Sean Marion, you do that in a heartbeat. You don't even think about it.
Right. Or, well, you know, I'm not, I mean, I'm like a lot of people. I mean, I've never seen the guy play. I mean, I saw the tapes on ESPN. Who knows?
Well, considering that that's the one they're high on, let's say if it were Hibbert or, you know, the guy that Justin likes,
no,
whoever it is. Whoever
please
it is
not
that
Hibbert.
The team.
Oh, please not Hibbert.
Not Hibbert. The kid from Florida, the power forward.
Oh, God, him. Nah.
You don't like him. Well, Jack
does. No, I don't like him either. I think he's a plotter. I think he's, you know, he's Chris Wilcox. You know,
well, my point was, though, that if there's somebody that they like in the 4-5-6 range, even if it's Spencer Hawes, who I happen to like a lot, to get Sean Marion for
Durant,
I mean, you
right.
do it. You just do it, and
right.
you don't think twice.
That's right. So you know, if they could get a Garnett, if they could get a Marion, if they could get Gasol, I just don't think. Is the right player for them. I mean, offense he's great, but defensively he's not good. So,
well,
you know.
And I think we're looking here, too, you know, when Tang Wei's talking, as I said earlier, the when they re-up Doc, you know, I had a feeling that they were tying Danny in with him. And there could be a lot of pressure on these guys, and we know that Paul has the ear of the ownership, and, you know, the ownership's first goal is to sell tickets, so... You know, they like to make those moves and in terms of coaching GM changes. You know, it gives a whole new vision, a whole new shtick that they can sell. So there may be some truth to that they're feeling some pressure to get a player in right away that can help. But I'd take Sean Marion under any condition, Sean Marion for Durant. And we're going to get something else thrown in, a high pick. In the top 10 thrown in with it, boy, you're onto something, Craig.
I don't know.
The other alternative, if they get Durant, is to trade Pierce. That's another alternative.
That's fine.
Now that's exactly where I was going. Well, John, go ahead and develop that thought because I'm
Pierce.
With you.
I don't want to trade Pierce. I think this team could coexist with Durant and Pierce because we haven't seen Durant play in an offense where he's not the focal point. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, Franklin, that last year Texas's team was completely about getting the ball into Durant's hands and letting him do something with it. We just haven't seen him work within an offense where he's playing with other highly talented players. So, you know, I don't want to say there's a chance, but there's certainly we don't know what he can do. Outside of that framework.
Well,
and saying
that's
that,
true,
though,
I'm
certainly fine with trading Paul Pierce. I would rather see Kevin Durant here than Paul Pierce here because I believe that Kevin Durant has the ability to be among the top five players in the league. Paul Pierce does not have that ability. I mean, he's at the apex of his abilities right now, and he's probably at best a top 15, top 10 guy.
Right.
Kevin Durant has the ability to be a special player. Paul Pierce doesn't, and that's fine, you know, and I agree that if you trade Paul Pierce with the idea that you can't have either one, you're setting your team back, and you probably aren't going to win that many games next year. But to me, if we win 35 games with Durant and Jefferson and whatever, you know, stuff you get from trading Paul Pierce, I'm better with that than I am with trading the number two pick and winning 44 games with... Flotsam, Jetsam, and Sean Marion. I don't think that Sean Marion's a winning player. He let, you know, the year before they got Steve Nash, they were a 23-win team. Or, I'm sorry, 27-win team. That to me, does not show that he's the type of guy that can bring us over the hoop. And
Marion's not perfect, there's no question. I mean, even Garnett's not perfect. You can make the same argument about Garnett. What's he ever won?
Sure.
How many games did they win with him last year? So,
right.
I mean... You know,
but he's a big man who can pass and he can rebound. And not saying that Marion can't rebound, but he's still undersized at the power forward, you know, position. And so I think there's a fit factor there. You know what I mean? If we had Garnett and you put Jefferson at center, I think we'd get away with that.
You would.
Garnett's got the
right.
contract.
So, right.
And you still have Pierce, and you still have Rondo, and you still have West.
But I don't know that you get away with it as well with Marion at the four. And Jefferson at the five. I think there's a significant difference there.
No, I agree. I think Marion is interestingly, Marion plays better at the four sometimes because you can outquick people as opposed to trying to at the
three. Yeah, matchups always dictate. That's true. Yep.
Right. So you never really know, but You know, I think, you know, the thing about Odin is that you know he's going to be worth 10 wins even if he never touches the ball on offense. I mean, that's why Odin is so powerful a player. Like the guy from Indiana said, you know, the guy you had on earlier.
Davey, yeah.
Yeah, who sounded to me like someone who knows the game. So, you know, Durant isn't that kind of presence. The problem is if Durant isn't touching the ball and scoring a lot of points for you, he's not going to do the other things for you.
Yeah.
Odin is. I mean, that's the difference. So, you know, once again, I'll drop off, but just to say, well, you know, that if they're talking about trading the number two pick, if they get it, I think given, you know, depending on the deal, that could be a very good deal.
Well, Frank, thank you for the call, and
okay.
You know, I love the spirit to the call. I like how it gets all of us all riled up. You know, I dig it, and you're into it too, and that's cool.
Your statement got me all, well, you know, your statement, you know, in response. I mean, Tangway is not my, you know, I wish they could find somebody better than Tangway and Dickerson to be the mouthpieces for this team. They've got to be better people than that. I mean, you know, maybe they can get, I don't know. Somebody from the BC women's team or something. I don't know. But, you know,
okay.
I think it's very possible that they could make that trade. So, anyway, enjoyed your show. Thanks a lot.
Excellent.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, Frank's becoming a regular caller. I think he likes it. I think he likes it for sure.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to tell you, though, we had Dickerson on the show, and I think he's a heck of a lot more knowledgeable than is necessarily his job role would indicate when you watch him on TV. I mean, TV is a different place than radio, and you know, give him another chance. We're going to bring him back on. I think you know, I think you'll be impressed the next time he comes on the show. But JB, what were you going to say in response to the?
Well, I think Dickerson's a great guest, and I think conversely, going back to what Frank said. And Dickerson, whenever I've heard him on the radio doing basketball talk, it's been very entertaining, and I could listen to him all afternoon. I think he's terrific. But the idea of trading Pierce at this point, I don't think ownership is going to do that. And I, you know, go back to several months ago when you know, we were talking about the relationship between Paul and Wick and. You know, that's something to be reckoned with here, and I repeat that for about the third or fourth time, but I'm quite sure I don't think that Danny has the okay to trade Pierce. I don't think they would let him do it at this point.
No, they're locked in. You're right. I think they are totally locked in. But I also believe that the success of having fans come into this come into the stadium and, you know, come into the garden and watch these guys, it's not Paul Pierce. I'm sorry. It's not. It's the youth. And I think you could get away with, I think you could buy yourself a few more years if you did trade Paul Pierce. And, you know, I mean, you know, Simmons alluded to that. I just don't think Golden State's crazy enough to make that deal. But, you know, I do think that, you know, I think there's a possibility there that, you know, Durant and Jefferson and Rondo, and you start developing, you know, that kind of a core that the fans would keep coming. I think it would almost buy them more time if they – everybody always complained during the last 3 years, look, decide which way you're going. It's either a rebuilding process or it's not. And I'm actually okay with the way they've kind of, you know, nurtured it along, brought in so many young guys but not too many. And, you know, that's why I've had the patience is I, you know, I didn't really feel like – I'm glad they're not trading away our entire future – to take a shot at the title, especially, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when Shaq was still dominant in this league, because I just don't think it would have gotten done. I don't think they had a chance. Now it's starting to, you know, it's the league is getting a little bit more ripe for the next generation of teams to step up and start to upset, you know, the Spurs and everybody else. And so, you know, I mean, that's how I look at it is that, you know, if they went full-blown rebuilding, I think that there's a large amount of fans that would still come in, especially with the hype that comes with Durant. You know, I think that he just kind of makes things all good, and trading Pierce gives them an excuse to let some of these other young guys, come along a little bit more. Maybe they all that maturates. The timing match, you know, is better. But I think you're right. If they get tied to Paul Pierce, they're going to have to win really soon. I mean, they're going to have to be in the Eastern Conference Finals in the next 2 years, or it's just there's big time trouble in Boston. So
well, I just hope that we can have, you know, whether or not what's no matter what side of the argument you're having, I hope we can have this argument Tuesday night, because Tuesday night it will mean that either we have the one or two pick. And we can decide whether or not Durant or Pierce, or love to be able to have that discussion Tuesday or next week or next month or next year. But first things first, gents, and we definitely need a positive result at 8:30 there on Tuesday night. And you know, certainly again, I'm putting the call out again. Everybody, come to CelticsStuffLive.com Tuesday night. 9 p.m. We'll be broadcasting. We'll be taking your calls. We're going to have Grandy. We're going to have Jeff Goodman on. We're going to talk about everything in between. And we really, really want to make sure that your voice is heard. That's going to be a big night for Celtics history, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it is, which way it goes.
You know what I'd like to see Tuesday? I want to see the envelopes frozen together so that Stern can't pull two of them apart.
I just want to see Tommy Heinsohn come back in one piece. That's what I want to see. You know, I know everybody's kind of secretly hoping that, you know, that Tommy will have a horrible moment just so they could see his reaction. But I want to see a happy Tommy Heinsohn. He's been sticking with us for a long time. You know, after coming in what, 81? Is that when Gorman and Tommy started? You know, and he had 7 or 8 good years to watch. And then, you know, for the last 20 years, he's been watching it, you know, unravel and wind back up, you know, about halfway and unravel again. And, you know, he deserves it. We all deserve it. It's been 20 years.
Odin or bust.
That's right. Well, there are definitely some disgruntled people out there. We're going to end the show tonight on a call from Brett, and it's not the entire call. It's he called, I think it was last Monday night after listening to the show, and I've got the first 3.5 minutes, but he placed a call and he left us a message, and he has been on before. You've heard him call in maybe a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't even get the entire first message. He left us 8.5 minutes of messages, and I am going to post the entire call for the download. You know, you'll see it on the post for this show. You'll be able to download Brett's call-in separately, or listen to his call-in separately from the archived show of tonight's show. So if you are interested in hearing the rest, but I'm telling you, Brett went on a little bit of a tirade, and I think he definitely needed some sleep. But
Or some better drugs.
Yeah, and he admits to this. So we're gonna close on Brett's call in, and but it's classic Brett. Thank you very much for putting yourself out there in the middle of the night, and I hope you don't mind us putting your entire call. But you're obviously upset, and I can only hope that Tuesday night will alleviate all your worries. We're all hoping for that. So everybody, have a good night. Join us at 9 Tuesday night. Like John said, we're going to have Goodman and Grandy, and we might be looking to line up a few others. So we'll see you. We'll see you Tuesday night. Here's Brett.
Hey fellas, what's up? It's Brett. I called you guys 2 weeks ago. I think I'm the only person that ever talks about Danny Ainge and how horrible he is. But it was fun. The reason I'm being quiet is because it's 10 of 12 on Wednesday night. I'm pathetic and I can't sleep. I'm literally thinking about the Celtics. Some would say that's sad. I think it's pretty sad, but it's better to have loved and lost, right? And I love the Celtics, and God knows we lose. But the reason I can't sleep is because this draft day is approaching, and that's why I'm calling and leave the message, actually, is because I know you guys got a real busy show coming up, so I figured maybe you want to cue the music and let me just have a two-minute tirade or whatever. But as draft day approaches, I'm pretty scared because the whole situation we're in right now is horrible. Doc already has the extension. I was praying that Doc wouldn't get the extension before draft day, because then that would be a sign that upper management has told Danny, well, has made the decision that Danny's on a short leash. And like his fate, as the big O on WEEI would say, is attached to how the ping pong balls fall. But that's not the case. They already extended him, so it means that Danny has done his thing and gotten them to buy into whatever the heck he's trying to do all over again. So let's use this analogy for me to try to enrage you if I can, because I'm such a lonely guy on this side of the spectrum. Danny loves to talk about his chips. So let's use our situation right now with the paradigm of Texas Hold'em. All right? 4 years ago, Danny Ainge got dealt a pair of twos. Not a very good hand, but hey, it's good enough. It's something, right? He's got a pair of twos. Say whatever you want about Twom, but he's got a pair of twos, right? The flop comes, and there's an ace and a king. Immediately he should fold, but he doesn't. He keeps throwing in chips. He keeps throwing in chips. Hey, here's a Chris Mim. Hey, Jermaine Jones. Hey, you know, Gary Payton. All he's doing is making all these trades. And now 4 years later, we find ourselves on the eve of, like, the most important day in our franchise. And we got to be prepared for that river to come. The river's coming on Tuesday. And it better be another two to go with Paul and Al. And if it's not, then we're totally screwed. But regardless, no matter what, we shouldn't be in this position. If the two does come up, do you look across the table and say, hey, Danny, well played hand? No, you don't, because that idiot didn't play the odds and had himself in a horrible position. It's just like in that movie Rounders, where Matt Damon says, there's one card left in the deck to help them, and I wonder how they can be so pathetic to even let themselves get in that position. Danny's got one card in the deck to help him right now, and we should never be in that position. And his fate should not be tied to those ping pong balls that are coming up on Tuesday, like the Big O says, because we should never be in this position, and he should be out looking for a job right now.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Baby, let me be.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Cause you don't care about me. Got me sort of like a pillowcase, but you let my love go to waste. So unchain my heart, oh please, please set me free.